Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 38. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, author, speaker, blogger, and champion of simple living, Susan Vogt. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It is not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It is not a hobby. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the principle, live simply, that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. I'm glad you're with me today from Paso Robles, California. Susan Vogt is a speaker and award-winning author. She is committed to helping enrich marriages, inspire children, deepen faith, and simplify our lives. For many years, she was the editor of the Journal of the National Association of Catholic Family Life Ministers, and content editor for the U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops website on marriage. Susan has worked in family ministry for the Catholic Church for over 30 years, designing and leading marriage, parenting, and leadership programs. A counselor by training, she has taught on the high school and university level. Susan and her husband of 40-plus years, Jim, have worked with ecumenical and social justice organizations, including Parenting for Peace and Justice. She has written 5 books and co-authored and edited several others. Susan and Jim live in Covington, Kentucky, and have 4 young adult children who wander the world. Although a committed Catholic, Susan is also committed to helping others find and deepen their own spirituality wherever the Spirit may lead. She is a vowed member of the Marianist Family of Mary, a lay branch of the Marianist religious order. She has helped found 2 lay Catholic communities, and is currently a member of ONOWIM. She serves on the international team of Marianist laity representing North America, Asia, Australia, and Ireland. Jim is a national director of the Marianist Social Justice Collaborative. Previously, he was national administrator for the Parenting for Peace and Justice Network. His career has spanned working as an urban planner in Cincinnati and to being a house husband.
I'm so pleased to speak to Susan Vogt, a longtime friend and a colleague in the voluntary simplicity faith-based movement. Susan, I'm sure you're aware that I work with a lot of people in this simple living, both those who are secular-minded and those who are faith-minded. And I'm pleased to say that I consider you one of the most overtly faith-based simple livers that I know. Now, I know that you and Jim are both members, lay members of the Marianist Order. We think of orders like the Franciscans. I work with the Franciscans. Can you tell us what is sets the Marianists apart, or what is distinctive about the Marianists?
Well, that's a good question, because one would assume that it has a lot to do with Mary. And in the deepest sense, it does have to do with Mary being the person who brought Christ to the world. But what is most attractive to me about the Marianist charism is that it was founded as a way, what we call discipleship of equals, that there is not a hierarchy of the lay people, the priests, the sisters, and the brothers, that there's role but not ranks, so one is not higher than the other. And we work collaboratively together.
Now, I noticed that you have started several Christian communities through your life. I'm familiar with, let's say, one colleague is starting some co-housing in San Diego. I'm familiar with the Catholic Worker House in Des Moines, you know, the Dorothy Day House. What is distinctive about the communities that you have started or helped to start?
Yes, well, the current community that I've been part of for quite a few years is called Onawim in the greater Cincinnati area. And you mentioned Catholic Worker House. One of our projects is that we helped found and volunteer at our local Catholic Worker House. So we are a lay community and led by our own members, so we don't have an outside mentor or guide or spiritual director, but we do that for each other. And we're very mission oriented in that we feel we support each other in faith and we grow in faith together. But part of that has to be an outward thrust in our viewpoint, that we have quite a few social justice endeavors that we have worked on over the years. One was what we called Onawim Housing, where we started a housing effort to provide housing for low-income people, and so we had to renovate the houses and interview people for as tenants and repair things and keep things going. We have since turned that over to a more professional nonprofit organization. We've started daycare centers for the inner city. We've done a lot of things like that. That's just the community that I was part of here. Now, in other cities, Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Cleveland, Ohio, I was involved in starting communities there together with my husband and a few other people who we would find as we just worked and went about our business. We found people with similar values, and we'd say, let's try to be more intentionally together and pursue faith and the actions that would flow from that, because we're stronger together than we are as individuals.
Just to give the listener an idea of where you're actually located, you're in Covington, Kentucky. That sounds to me like a suburb of Cincinnati. That would be in extreme western Kentucky.
Yes, well, it's actually extreme northern Kentucky. But you're right, it is Kentucky. It's a separate state, but it is basically greater Cincinnati. It's like a suburb of Cincinnati. In fact, the airport for Cincinnati is in Kentucky, which alarms some people when they land at the airport.
You're involved in so many aspects of simple living. It's interesting to me, though, that except for your latest book called Blessed by Less, Clearing Your Life of Clutter by Living Lightly, your books all incorporate simple living, but there's very few that are called simple living. There's a very strong spiritual thrust in all of your books, but you incorporate simple living into your various family, marriage, parenting books.
Right. Professionally, my background is counseling and family ministry. So that is the kind of work that I have done in terms of my jobs. Jim and I have been trained to lead marriage enrichment programs. We've done marriage preparation. We do parenting programs, etc. And it's while we were doing these from the dimension of, well, how can we have the fullest, most alive marriage possible? Because from our early adulthood on, we both had values that incorporated simple lifestyle. And I think it's from post-college days on, we've been trying to integrate that into everything we did. And so as we started to raise our children, it was a natural to see how we could do this, how we could integrate our values of simplicity in our parenting. And one place that really helped us was that at the time our children were young was the same time that the Parenting for Peace and Justice Network was getting started. It was founded by Jim and Kathy McGinnis in St. Louis, and we found in their approach a way to combine our wanting to be good, conscientious parents with the values of living simply and not taking more than our fair share of the Earth's resources and money. So PPJ, Parenting for Peace and Justice, got us started in this whole movement of trying to live simply more than just as an individual. But when we have young children, of course, we can't just or did not want to just move into a slum area or to a third world country. We didn't have a whole lot of time to do much community organizing or to be active politically to change the political system. So we found in this movement a way to incorporate these values in our normal everyday lifestyle and just to do it with the support of other people. I think one of the beauties of any movement is that other folks are trying to do it with you. And in community, we get personal support and we get challenged and we get help. I'm just thought of one example is that we recently went to one car. We started out our life with one car in our family, and eventually we went to two cars. And then our kids left home, and we were in a situation where we didn't as much need two cars. And so we decided when one of our cars died that we wouldn't replace it. And that was a little disconcerting. We weren't sure how it was going to work. But then we realized we had a community. We had neighbors. We had friends who didn't live too far that were part of our faith community. And so we could share cars if we at some point needed something more than public transportation. So the community aspect of life has helped us live more simply. If we had to, everyone had to own their own lawnmower, their own equipment, tools, I think it's a lot harder than if you say, there's some things that I don't have to personally own. We can share it with our neighbors.
Yes, this is very similar to the new sharing movement that we see in the U.S., which is not faith-based, but it surely resonates with what you're talking about, sharing tools, sharing cars. It's a wonderful way to go.
Yes, and you said it's not faith-based, and I think you are right that faith is the underlying force and reason that Jim and I have taken on the values that we have. But I think most of the things that we have tried to do transcend any one religion, and that they are really pretty universal values that people of goodwill who are trying to be fair and honest in life would come to whether they practice a particular religion or not. I think the values are pretty transcendent.
Let's talk a little bit more about a Parenting for Peace and Justice, because you wrote a little book called Kids Creating Circles of Peace, which, if I remember correctly, was based on the pledge that you folks had written Tell us about the peace pledge.
The Pledge of Nonviolence, we call it. And that is something that my husband actually was one of the authors of. And we came to the, again, it was written as a group effort. And the different dimensions of it have to do a lot with communication. It has to do with respecting nature. It has to do with listening well and having courage to stand up for your values. And we, after Jim had helped to write it, we thought, well, I suppose we should try this in our own family in an organized way. So we brought the pledge to our family. We had three children living at home at the time, and they were probably about 8 to 17 years old. And one of the kids said, well, you know, I don't know, this is all good and well for you, but I'm not sure. We asked the children if they wanted to sign this pledge. Would they agree to sign it? And the one child said, I will only sign it if I can put in parentheses after my name, as I see fit. Because one of the elements of the pledge was to challenge violence. If we saw someone fighting, for example, in the schoolyard, that we would try to stop it or intervene. And he said, you know, that might be suicide. That might not be something that I should be doing. I might get hurt. And I will have to use my judgment as to whether I should personally try to break up a fight or not. And we said, you know, that's really true. I think that applies to all elements of this pledge, and that he put after his name as I see fit. And I think at least all of us intuitively interpreted the pledge like that, that there are times that we have to discern what is the most prudent action that will accomplish our goal, even if it doesn't meet the letter of the law.
Very thoughtful child.
Yes, he continues to guide us.
In our family, the four of us, when our children were adolescents and teenagers, had family fun night on Sunday night, and we were guided to some degree by your book, Just Family Nights, 60 Activities to Keep Your Family Together in a World Falling Apart.
So I'm thrilled that somebody like you used that.
Yes, we allowed each person of the four of us to choose the favorite foods that we were going to eat that Sunday night, and also the activity we were going to play or try. So we took turns, and it was very helpful and bonding. And we also combined with our weekly family meeting, in which everybody got a vote on what we were going to do and how we were going to spend our money and that kind of thing. I get the feeling, though, that this book, Just Family Nights, the word just sounds like, oh, that's just a family night. I have a feeling there's a double meaning there.
Oh, of course, yes. And it has to do with justice also, because a lot of the family nights had as a theme either not only family bonding, but also peacemaking and trying to, again, live simply, trying to learn about other cultures, trying to grow in faith also. But I can tell you a little story about the family nights that we would have, that we always, one of our, I don't know, I hesitate to call it a bribe, but actually it was. Most of the times the kids loved the family nights and they came willingly. But sometimes as the kids got a little older, the incentive for them to take part in it was that we would always end it with a special dessert. And so that was, in a sense, I think of it as an incentive. Others might call it a bribe. But there was one family night that one of our children, I think he was 13 or 14, the oldest one at the time, so said, oh, you know, this is just kiddie stuff. I don't think I want to be involved in this anymore. And we said, well, it's your choice. This is not something that we are going to force you to do. So he sat out one of the family nights, and Jim, in his wisdom, designed that particular night to involve a treasure hunt for hearts around the house. I think it had to do with Valentine's Day. And each heart had a dollar bill connected with it. And so if you found the heart, you also got some money. And in those days, a dollar bill was pretty significant money for our kids. And so they were, at the end of the night, the other children were saying, oh, I made $3 or $4, $5. And our son, who had opted out, said, I didn't realize that that might happen. It's, well, you never know. You know, sometimes it's going to be more exciting and productive than other times. And oh, and one time at a family meeting, we were discussing what we would do for Lent. I think that was it. And again, this child thought, well, you know, I'm too old for this. And so our practice had been to not eat meat on Friday as a gesture towards reminding ourselves of Friday sacrifice. And our daughter said at the family meeting, well, you know, I don't see why that's any sacrifice, not eating meat. We should, you know, we like fish just as well as other things. And if we really want to sacrifice something, we should say no desserts on Friday. And so we agreed as a family that we wouldn't have any dessert on Friday. And then when the first Friday came and our son, who had not taken part in the meeting, said, where's dessert? We said, oh, we decided that at the family meeting. He said, well, I didn't decide it. Right. Well, you could have been there. You weren't, though. And so this is what the family decided. He didn't miss a meeting after that.
You are really sneaky. Yes, I have used bribery also. We used bribery to get our son to practice his violin when he was young, and now he's a professional violist.
So, no kidding. What kind of bribery did you use?
Okay, well, basically, if he practices violin for 30 minutes a day for 5 days a week, he got to roll the dice. And each number on the die from 1 to 6 represented different levels of a reward.
Ah.
And 1 was something very simple, and 6 was $5 towards something he wanted, you know, a game or something. And so, you know, over a period of a month, he could accumulate something and then get the reward he wanted, and it worked quite well. So, yes. Well, I'm not above using a little bribery. Well, Susan, I have to observe, it looks to me like you're sort of following the growth of your children, because one of your latest books is called Parenting Your Adult Child. And I would assume that most of your children are now adults.
Yes, they are all young adults, ranging in age from 27 to 41. And it is just an amazing, marvelous time of life for us, because we are learning so much from them. In a way, it is what I call turning the tables on us, that instead of us being the primary teachers, and we still have a role of advising and presence, but they are the ones that have been teaching us a lot in these last 10 years of life, especially, of course, about technology. But that's what helps us stay current, is listening to their wisdom.
Excellent. Well, was there some event or something that moved you to write another recent book called Money in the Kingdom of God, Six Essential Attitudes for Followers of Christ?
Well, that one is a Bible study that is more directly and intentionally scripture-based. And it had been growing in me for a long time, but it came primarily because someone asked me to do it. A publisher said, "We know that you care about these things, and we do these Bible studies. Could you do one on the use of money and stewardship?" And so it's an area that's close to my heart. I try very hard not to be judgmental of others who use their money differently, but I think scripture and faith has led me to believe, to feel that this is the best way to live one's life. And best is probably not the best word for it, but that it's a more satisfying way to live, to live more selflessly. It makes me happier, in a sense. Now, that's assuming that one already has the basics needed for survival. I'm not talking about living in destitution. I don't think that's healthy or good for anyone. But with both the Bible study on money and the most recent book, Blessed by Less, my goal was, what I found is that by letting go of some of the stuff that we had accumulated over our lives, that I feel freer and I feel happier. I feel more satisfied about how my life is going. And so it's not a loss as much as a gain, even as I'm divesting, in a sense, by a lot of things that we've accumulated over the years.
You've been listening to part one of my two-part interview with Susan Vogt. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. or on our Facebook page or our Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes on our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In response to my blog, Dealing with Post-Christmas Consumerism, Duana Litz said, "It seems we have come full circle. My mother told me that when she was growing up, hardly anyone ever went out to eat and everyone cooked at home. Now, with all the GMOs, etc., it seems that healthy families are eating at home again and making their own meals. Simple living and a quiet life is a wonderful way to be creative and be happy." Thank you, Duana. In regard to my Simple Living Works email newsletter number 40, called New Collaborators and Champions, Steve Mayberry said, "Hi, Jerry. These are some great connections to make a much wider audience. Thank you for pulling these all together. I sent this out to several other pastors, family, and friends." Thank you, Steve. I hope you'll do the same. Send out my blog and this podcast information to your family and friends as well. In episode 39, Susan and I continue our conversation, especially about the season of Lent, which starts Ash Wednesday, February 18th this year. Later, I interview another champion of simple living today, blogger and event organizer Jeff Lazowski, known most recently for the Simple Rev conference in Minneapolis. Time to wrap up episode 38 of Simple Living Works. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. We'd love to get to know you as a subscriber to this podcast and to the blogs we post new each week. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. You can also subscribe to my other podcast called The Common Good Podcast in iTunes. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes. Click About. That's at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson for a Simple Living Works podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others.